and Curtis Road in Savoy. Pages for All Ages offers a wide selection of books, compact discs, stationery, magazines, DVDs, children's books, and gift ideas, and features a full line of coffee, drinks, and teas at Pages Cafe. On the web at www.pagesforallages.com.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're also pleased to welcome back to the show Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. He's with us occasionally here on the program to talk about cars. And the idea is here we'll try to help you out, suggest some strategies for dealing with a problem if you're having a problem. And all you have to do is give us a call. Tell us what it is, the make and the model, and give the best description you can of the problem, and Rick will see if he can suggest a solution, something you can try. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line. That one's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. 333-WILL or 9455, and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Thanks for being here. Once again,
you're welcome.
Appreciate it. Anything in the way of general stuff that you could say about winter maintenance, particular things that people should be paying attention to?
Well, it seemed to me that one of the biggest things I noticed that last snowfall we had was how little people were cleaning their cars off, particularly taillights, headlights also need to be cleaned off. One area that most people don't realize is at the base of the windshield where those little slots are on the hood, that area needs to be cleaned off of snow, because when you put your fan and your heating system on defrost, the air is being pulled through the snow or being tried to be pulled through the snow, and of course it's absorbing moisture as it's being pulled through the snow. So you're trying to clean the inside of the windshield. Well, all you're doing is blowing moist air back on the windshield. So if a car seems like it takes forever to clean the windshield off, you need to make sure that area is free of snow. The other thing with regards to defrost is that most cars, the air conditioning system needs to operate in defrost to help remove the moisture. So if you have a car that the air conditioner doesn't work, in the winter you're going to have problems with visibility through the windshield if it gets fogged up. Of course, tires are important. You need to measure your tires, adequate tread depth. If you have questions about that, you can just simply go to any tire selling store in town, and I'm sure they'd be more than happy to look at the tires for you. Windshield wiper blades obviously are important. Also, the operation of the windshield washers, the nozzles that spray onto the windshield. Battery typically comes to mind, but believe it or not, there are more problems with batteries in the summer than there are in the winter. But as a general rule on a battery, I tell people every 5 years. Just replace it, because it's kind of running on borrowed time, and it's eventually going to leave you stranded. And, of course, it's always the wrong time, the wrong place, and very inconvenient.
If your car is unlucky enough to have to live outside, if you don't have a garage, is that going to shorten battery life?
Not really.
No, so it doesn't really matter. Okay. You were talking about keeping the car clear. I guess the thing that amazes me a lot in winter after you've had a snow is you see people driving around. And what they've done is they've scraped off just about enough of the windshield so they have a little window to look out of.
Right.
And that's about all. And that seems to me that that's kind of hazardous, because it cuts down your visibility all around the car out there. You don't just need to be able to look out the front. You need to be able to look out the sides, and you need to be able to look out the back.
Yeah, you need peripheral vision. I mean, particularly when you come up to a stoplight or a stop sign, you need to look both ways twice. Sometimes you may be able to stop fine, but that other lane may be ice, and whoever's in that lane may not be able to stop. So you need to be defensive when you're driving, obviously.
Yeah. And I was sure that you would, if I asked you, that you would bring up the subject of tires. I'm sure that this is now a particularly critical time. If you're driving around, say, in the summertime and the pavement's dry, maybe it's not quite as much an issue. But if you've got snow and you got ice, if the pavement's at all going to be wet, I'm sure that then tires become even more critical, and you want to make sure that they're in good shape. Is that the kind of thing, and you said that all you have to do is go someplace where they sell tires and you can have them take a look at them. But for anybody else just looking at your tires, is there something that you can do as a individual driver, some way that you can look at the tire and get an idea, is that okay, or is there some possibility that I'm going to have a problem?
Well, I suppose it's without a tool that actually measures the tread depth, there are on the tires what they refer to as wear bars. And the tread of the tires, where the gap is between the rubber, which is basically parallel to direction of travel, going at 90 degrees to that, there's a raised area in there that's referred to as a wear bar. And if that wear bar gets to the same surface as the tread of the tire definitely needs to be replaced. And that's usually around 2 to 3/32 of an inch.
Mm-hmm. And how many can you go by, either by mileage or by years, to decide, is that tire okay, or is it getting near the end of its life?
Well, the other thing, kind of along your earlier question about looking at tires, is just kind of a visual observation. Is the tread wear even from inside edge to outside edge? If you run your hand across the tire, does it feel like you're running your hand across like a hacksaw blade? In other words, it's feathered or sharp as you push one way or pull. Is it? That's an indication of an alignment problem. So alignment problems would be tire wear that's uneven across the face of the tread, or it has a feathered edge or a sharp edge to it as you run your hand across the tire.
Okay.
And tire pressure obviously is important. If you haven't checked tire pressures in the last couple of months, you should. It's gotten cooler. And, of course, the pressures are going to be lower.
Yeah, and the time to do that is when the vehicle has been standing for a while and not driving around, because then that raises the heat inside the tire and the pressure is going to go up.
Yes, just going down the road, it's going to generate friction and it's going to escalate the temperature within the tire and the pressure.
And it should be clear either in your owner's manual or maybe indeed on some part of the car somewhere, there should be a little sticker that says what the tire pressure should be.
Yeah, a lot of times it's in the door. When you open the driver's door, there's a series of stickers there. But yes, the owner's manual is the number one source for information.
So is there much difference in what they recommend for the summer and for the winter?
No.
Okay, so it should be the same.
Yes.
It may be because of atmospheric conditions that it may be different, but they're not recommending any different tire pressure and different inflation when it's colder or whether it's it's warm. Okay. Oh, well, we're here open to your questions. Rick Kartz from Rick's Automotive in Champaign is the guest. He's been here many times before to talk about cars and car problems. And if we can help you out, we'll certainly try. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. I'm sure I've asked you this question before, and I think I kind of know the answer, but is mileage affected by the tire pressure?
Yes.
So having your tires at the correct pressure should mean that you should also get better mileage, or you should get the optimum mileage for the vehicle.
Correct. It's just like if you think about riding a bicycle that's really low on tire pressure, how much harder it is to maintain the same speed or accelerate, whatever the case may be. It's the same analogy with a car. It's friction.
Okay. Well, let's talk with the caller here. We've got somebody in ready to go on our line number one in Urbana. Hello.
Howdy. I have three quick questions. One, I noticed that after I've had my oil changed at the quickie places, they often overfill the dipstick. So is that dangerous to cars? That's my first. Did you want to take them in order?
It's up to you. However you want me to do it.
Yeah, that's the first. The second is when a car is slightly damaged, when the frame is slightly torqued after a low mile per hour rear end collision, are there places that can really change it back to true? And the third is, have you seen any or many repairs associated with the current sweepback Toyota Priuses?
The last question again?
Uh-huh.
I guess Rick was not sure what it was you were asking.
Oh, I'm sorry. Have you seen many maintenance repair items that have been associated with the new line of sweepback Prius hybrid cars?
You mean as far as problems?
Yeah, any problems, repair things?
No, not in particular. I know there's got several that we take care of, and I know most of the customers follow there's a website that I guess is really good. I have looked at it a couple times.
And what is that website?
I don't know. I think if you just typed in maybe Prius forums, something along those lines.
Okay, great.
That it should eventually get you there. As far as your first question is with regards to overfilling, how do you check oil?
I wait. The car is level. Check it, clean it, put it back in, withdraw it, check the level.
So how long do you wait? So you run the car, you shut it off.
First thing in the morning,
Before you start the car?
Yes.
Oh, it will always be overfilled if you do it that way.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Because all the oil in the engine is going to drain down into the oil pan.
Okay. What's the proper way?
Okay. After you drive the car, you shut the car off, level ground, like you said. You let it sit for maybe a minute to two, and then check it.
Great.
And then as far as your second question with regards to the frame or frame damage, almost all body shops now have what they refer to as a frame machine, and it's what pulls the frame. In conjunction with that, they have tools where they make measurements. They're diagonal measurements, lateral measurements, and there's a publications that are put out by the manufacturers, and they have specific measurements from point to point. And as you're pulling on the car, you're making those measurements, and you keep pulling until you get to that point. And so to answer your question, yes, they can get it back exactly the way it was.
Okay, that's perfect. How is the strength, the safety test of the metal after it's been retorqued in position? I'm sure it'd vary with
the severity of the damage originally.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If it's severe enough, then that frame rail should be replaced because, yes, it is going to be significantly weaker.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks for the call. And anybody else here who's got questions about cars, you can give us a call. Talk with our guest, Rick Karch, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Do you have any sort of general feelings about the idea of the gas-electric hybrid engine? Maybe not specifically about the Prius, because I guess that there are other ways of doing it, and other car makers are looking at their own designs. So I think probably we could expect in the future there would be more cars offered with more gas hybrids, and it seems like a good idea in that the emissions are somewhat less and the mileage is somewhat better. So that seems like a pretty fair direction to be going in.
Well, it's like I tell people when they're making that consideration or they're looking at the hybrids. I mean, it's a wonderful concept. Obviously, in certain states, it's going to probably become required. Mm-hmm. But the way I look at it is I just simply say, okay, the car costs X amount of dollars. It's going to cost X amount of dollars to drive it, and then after so many years, you've got battery expenses. So you have to figure out the difference between a normal gas engine or diesel versus the hybrid. And a lot of times it's pretty considerable difference in pricing. So if that difference in pricing versus what you think you're going to save in gas versus how long you're going to have the car is all going to work out on paper, then it's a good deal. But if you're going to keep the car for 7 years and you only drive 5,000 miles a year, then no, it's not a wise investment if you look at it from an investment standpoint. If you look at it from an environmental standpoint, then obviously it's the right way to go.
Yeah. So one of the things that you mentioned that I guess people need to keep in mind is that there are batteries in this car, and they are batteries that have a limited life.
Yes.
So if you keep the car long enough, you're going to have to replace the batteries, and it's going to be a fairly significant expense. So that's one of the things you just have to not that there's anything wrong with it, you just have to know that going in.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's an expense down the road.
Yeah. So maybe I expect there probably be some people that aren't really quite sure what the deal with this engine is. I'm not, in fact, completely sure myself. I think I generally understand what it is. Maybe you could explain, what's the principle of the gas hybrid engine?
Well, it's electric motor, and there's a gas engine in there, too. And I've done some reading on it. I haven't done as much reading on it as I should. I'm sure there's someone in the audience that probably knows a lot more about it than I do. But the principle is that it's going to run off batteries as much as possible. And then the gas engine, of course, when we need extra power to accelerate or pass, is going to be activated. And that's what's renewing the charge within the battery mm-hmm. as we're going down the road. So it's, and they're really quiet, obviously, when you start them. So I don't know too much about how heavy they are versus a normal car, but a lot of people just rave about the mileage with them. Obviously why they buy them.
So it's at lower speeds, it runs on the electric motor, and then at some point the car decides when it's going to switch over to the gasoline engine and then run off that.
Well,
so that's sort of it?
I'm not sure. What I should do next time is let me do a little reading so I have a little better, more accurate answers. Like I said, I'm sure there's someone in the audience that knows a lot about that's done a lot of research on them. I personally have not.
Okay. So you actually haven't been working? Have you been actually working on them?
Yes. Yeah, we've seen them. Just normal maintenance, oil services, nothing in particular like the earlier caller asked about.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, when you think about what's coming down the line in terms of particularly in personal transportation, it seems a little confusing. We know that we're going to have hybrids. I guess they're going to continue to be gasoline engines. They'll probably continue to be diesel engines. Maybe in some cases there might be still some place for an all-electric car, although the problem there is that you can only go so far on the charge.
Right.
Do you think that what's going to be the case in the future that there's going to be more of a mix of different kind of power plants in vehicles?
Well, there's going to have to be. I mean, the manufacturers, look at General Motors and Ford presently, where their financial situation is. And, mm-hmm. you know, the big vehicles really, the sales of the SUVs and big trucks and things like that, obviously trucks in particular, a lot of people purchase simply because they need them for work. Some of the large SUVs, the sales have plummeted, and the resale value has too.
Yeah. But it seems like people still are looking for something that they can use to haul kids or stuff, and now
right.
they're going to they still want SUVs, but they want smaller ones that get better mileage.
Better mileage, and some of them are so big, particularly driving them in town, just from a parking standpoint, they're just not much fun.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I can imagine if you have something like a Navigator or a Hummer or something like that, the maneuverability.
Or a full-size van trying to parallel park or park in front of the school, and, you know, it's hard.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we got some callers now. Let's go on. Rick Karch, by the way, is our guest from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. He's with us periodically throughout the year to talk about cars and to take questions. And if you're having a problem, tell us about it. Tell us the car. Give us the best description you can, and he'll see if he can help you out. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Next caller is in Urbana, line number one. Hello. Caller there, line one in Urbana. Okay. How about let's try, we'll try going to line four in Mattoon then. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I don't know if this is one you can help with, but I'll throw it at you anyway. I have a 2001 PT Cruiser, which I'm really happy with, except for two things, which is one, gas mileage, and two, radio reception. And I use ethanol almost exclusively, and I do use it exclusively unless I travel and can't get it. And I'm wondering if that is the best thing for this car. It seems like when I've traveled and I've had to use something that wasn't ethanol and used instead of an 89 octane, an 87, it seemed the mileage was almost a little bit better. And also, I'm wondering if I'm really happy with the way my stereo is in the car. It's got everything I wanted except the reception, especially in the AM, is really lousy. So is there anything I can do to help increase the gas mileage, and is there anything I can do to boost the radio reception?
Well, as far as the mileage, I've kind of told people that for a lot of years that, you know, if they recommend 89, try 87, because in some vehicles you actually do get better mileage. As far as the ethanol is concerned, have you tried gas without ethanol as far as a comparison?
Well, just like I said, when we've traveled and I wasn't able to get up and all, we go somewhere that isn't, I would prefer to use it just because of everything that goes, you know, that's good about it.
Right.
But, yeah, it seems, and I mean, you know, it's like on road trips, and so it seems like it gets a little bit better mileage. And if I can't get ethanol, then I go to the, it goes to the 87 octane, and usually ethanol around here is 89.
Mm-hmm. So as far as the mileage is concerned, have you made a comparison to what other people are getting, or are you just going by what the sticker said?
I'm pretty much going by what the sticker said, and I haven't talked to a lot of other people, but it seems to be in what Consumer Reports reported, it, you know, pretty much. I mean, I knew when I bought the car it wasn't a mileage champ, but I don't know if there's anything. You know, I'm getting in the low to mid-20s on highway miles and probably low 20s in town.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, I think you just need to maybe call the dealer and maybe they can give you a pretty good idea of what people typically are getting in town. As far as the mileage on the sticker is concerned, it's kind of, you're usually not going to get that.
Right.
Because that is done on a dynamometer and there's no wind resistance. It's the way they do it, it's not very accurate as far as actual driving is concerned.
Yeah, it's not real world.
No. So then, of course, as far as mileage is concerned, normal maintenance, tune-up oriented things, fuel injector cleaner at least four times a year.
Okay.
Tire maintenance, tire pressures, alignment. Obviously, driving habits have a lot to do with it as well. Is that pretty well?
Yeah, I probably am not doing the fuel injector cleaner as often as I should. That's one of those out of sight, out of mind kind of deals,
right.
I guess.
Well, and then how many miles are on the vehicle?
Right now, around 83, 84.
Mm-hmm. I would have, next time you have it in for service, have them check the oxygen sensors very carefully.
Okay.
And make sure they have a pretty good effect on fuel mileage, particularly at highway speeds.
Okay.
And as far as the radio, you still have the original antenna?
Right.
Well, then, number one, if you grab the antenna, is this is actually a mast-type antenna, or is this in the windshield?
No, this is a mast.
Okay. A lot of times if you just grab the antenna or wiggle the antenna, if you have the radio on and there's a significant change in the reception or it gets real crackly, then there's a good possibility that the grounding of the antenna is not good anymore.
Okay.
If all of those things check out, then you just simply substitute another antenna. It could be the radio itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that especially with AM radios that, you know, car makers are notorious for their standard units not being great anymore.
Yes. Yeah, particularly if the station is far away, if it's not a strong signal, changes at night, those type of things.
Mm-hmm. Would a different antenna do anything?
Well, that's why I usually check them. That's how I usually check them. Mm-hmm. Just turn the radio on, roll the windows down, or just you get in the car and have somebody wiggle the antenna or touch the antenna and see if you get a crackly noise through the speakers as they wiggle it, then a lot of times, like I said, the grounding may not be adequate.
Okay. Well, I remember a few years ago, I used to see a lot of cars that had these antennas that, you know, were just these big, long, loopy things that had a clip that attached somewhere around the window, on the window or the rear door, and, you know, I didn't know if going to something like that would be of benefit or not.
I wouldn't think so.
Okay. All righty. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. All right. Thanks for the call. We're here at the bottom of the hour here. We have some other callers for our guest, Ray Karch, who we will take in just a moment. However, first, we need to do this. This is a test of the emergency alert system.
System. This system was developed to provide information to the public during emergencies. This was a test.
And this is AM 580 WILL Urbana, Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and our guest this morning is Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. If you have questions about cars, you can call us 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And the next person here in line would be in Champaign, and line number two. Hello.
Yeah, I wanted to go back to the to the hybrid for a second. One of the things that makes them so great is that they have the regenerative braking. I don't know if you guys talked about that already. Did I miss that part?
No, we did not. Go ahead.
Okay. The regenerative braking, basically, when you think about all the energy it takes to get your car up from 0 to 30, and you have all that kinetic energy, and the idea is that when you brake, all that energy is essentially lost as heat in the brake pads, right? So that's just total wasted energy. So the idea is to put basically small electric motors as part of the braking system so that when you brake, all that energy, instead of wasting as heat in the brake pads, gets converted back into electricity to charge up the batteries. So when you're driving around in town, starting and stopping, you actually get better mileage than on the highway. So it's the opposite of a traditional gas engine because those brakes are charging up the batteries. So, that's one of the geniuses. And the other thing, is that if you think about how inefficient a gasoline engine is, all that energy wasted as heat just from the combustion. The gasoline engine just needs to be, done away with, maybe hopefully in the next 30 years, in our lifetime it will, because it's just horribly inefficient. And, maybe with fuel cells or better hybrid technology, as the batteries get better, that's going to be a huge thing because, like he was saying before, replacing those batteries is going to be expensive. As batteries get better, that will, hopefully you won't even have to replace them. So I guess I just wanted to share that little bit of technology. So.
Sure. So are you a Prius owner yourself?
No, I have to drive a truck for my job, and I have to pull a trailer, so I'm waiting for one to come out in a truck form, and I would buy it. I would pay extra money. I would, it's just out of principle, because I think it's atrocious that we waste all this gas when we don't have to, when the other technologies are out there. And I mean, if you think about it, look what's happening to GM. They're having so many problems, and I know they've got pension issues and stuff, but part of their problem is that they never saw the future when Toyota and Honda did. They've been doing research for years and years, have spent tens of millions of dollars in developing these hybrids, while GM was stuck in the 70s making, horribly inefficient big cars without a view beyond next quarter's profits. And now they're paying the price. And so I feel sorry for the people that lost their jobs, but I think all the board of directors should be fired because it's their fault that they haven't seen the future of this hybrid technology and just fuel efficiency in general. So I'll get off my soapbox.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call. No, I appreciate
okay.
it. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. So just one other question about I'm curious about the hybrid. When you start the car, does the gasoline engine start and then just sit there idling until you need it, or does it not actually start until the car decides, okay, we're going to run the gasoline engine now?
I'm not sure, to be honest.
Well, I there was some...
I started them several times, and they're so quiet, it seems to me that it... Because I've read articles where people have, pulled in their garage and thought they turned the car off, whereas they come back out several hours later and it's still running because it's simply running on the electric.
And it's so quiet that you can't hardly tell that it's
right.
on. Oh, okay.
So.
All right. Well, let's go on here. We'll talk with somebody in Urbana in line three.
Hi. Is that me?
Yeah.
Hi. Well, I'm also calling in to help you out with the hybrid issues a little bit. To answer your last question, when you start the car, it does start. The engine does start, the gasoline engine, but oftentimes it shuts off very soon thereafter. One thing people should know, though, is in the summertime, if you're running the air conditioner, that gasoline engine is going to run a lot. And the reduction in gas mileage that you get by running the air conditioner on the hybrid is going to be a lot more than the reduction in gas mileage that you get from running a conventional car, because a conventional car is idling anyway. The other thing people should know is that, like all cars, the mileage isn't quite as advertised. They test the hybrids on a dynamometer just as they do the conventional cars. And so where Prius makes the claim of getting mileage up in the 50 and 60 range, although it's higher on in town than it is on the road, for the reasons that one of the previous callers mentioned, neither one is accurate. And the actual mileage that you should expect, measuring it not by the little dealy on the dash panel, but by actually measuring it in the conventional way of figuring out how much gas went in the car and how many miles you drove, is around 40 miles to the gallon, which is okay, but it's not nearly as much as you would expect. And I also think, now here, Rick, maybe you can comment on this, because this gets into the technology of it a little bit. I think in the Midwest, you're not going to get as much out of it as you are in mountainous country, because what happens in the Midwest is that you don't run the battery down as far, and so you don't have as much capacity to recharge it back up. And once you get to the point where the battery is full, I'm sorry, regenerative braking doesn't do any good.
Hmm. Yeah, and then, like, typical batteries, they do learn, and they
well, I don't know whether it learns or not. Supposedly it has no memory. Mm-hmm. Because it's a nickel metal hydride. Whether or not there's some circuitry in there or a computer that remembers that you are always regenerating when the battery is close to full and then will thereafter let it get down farther in order to compensate for that, I don't know. I have a 2001 Prius. It gets around 40 miles to gallon. That's the old model. And now the battery's starting to wear out, and so the engine is running a lot more. The other thing I should mention is that the principle here that I don't think anybody's mentioned this yet on the radio, of how it works, is that the gasoline engine is running at a more nearly optimum speed all the time. So this is the idea behind this thing, is if when you're running a gasoline engine either too high in RPM or too low in RPM, it's somewhat inefficient. As you get it to this optimum speed, it's more inefficient, and the hybrid cars try to run the engine at more nearly that optimum speed, although they often do have to bring in that engine to supplement the electric motor in order to climb a hill or something or accelerate very quickly at higher speeds. I will say this, that it's a very nice car for pulling away from stoplights. Its acceleration from 0 to 20 is really better than any gasoline car.
Okay. Well, great. Thanks for the call.
Yep.
Thanks. All right.
Other callers here are ready to go, and we'll talk next with somebody in Mattoon in line 4 right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I've got a couple of questions. One, I've got a car that I haven't been driving near as much as I did in the past, and I've got about 20,000 miles on the same tires, and I just wonder, the tread seems to be good, and I was just curious about your opinion. Do tires suffer from, say, 5 years of age, 4 or 5 years of age, or do you just go by the tread?
Yes, they do. If you look at the sidewall of the tire, particularly around where the tire meets the wheel or the bead area, basically what you're looking for in that area is cracks where it's dried out and deteriorated, and it'll actually crack in that area. And if you see that, they do need to be replaced.
So look at the sidewalls.
Yes.
Not the tread.
Well, both, but to answer your question, as far as mileage and age, the cracking, when it starts to appear, is an indication that they need to be replaced.
Okay, thank you. The second question is regarding four-cylinder cars. A mechanic told me several years ago, I had an 89 Corsica four-cylinder, and that I'd be better off not to put ethanol, drive with ethanol gas. It doesn't fire as good. And I just wonder now, I've got a four-cylinder, but 2002, and I have been using just whatever on 87. And do you have any opinion on that?
Well, when I think each car is different, and the only way to answer your question is to try it.
And, okay, well, I've been trying it, and I can't tell much difference. So
okay.
maybe the technology now in the four cylinders is a little better than it was in 89.
Yeah, it's just it's an individual characteristic of different cars, and until you try it and see how it starts and accelerates and drivability and mileage, and then you can make the decision.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All
Thanks.
Right, thank you. To line two, this is someone in Champaign. Hello.
Hi. We have a 93 Camry that about 10,000 miles ago had a long overdue transmission service done. And now, almost a year later and 10,000 miles later, the transmission fluid is always way high, depending on whether it's hot or whether it's cold. Makes no difference. It's like high beyond the hot and cold fill lines. Is that anything to be concerned about?
Yeah, anytime a fluid level is overfilled, there's a chance for aeration, and a result of the air could potentially damage the transmission or the engine. How are you checking the fluid level?
My son does it. He checks it sometimes hot, sometimes cold, and he keeps saying this is odd. It doesn't seem to ever drop down to normal.
So is the car running?
I think he's checked it both ways. He checked it, you know, yesterday after driving it on the highway for about a half an hour.
Okay, well, it has to be running
okay.
while you check it.
Okay, I think he's done that.
Because if you check it when it's shut off, it will be overfilled.
Okay, so it has to be running, but there should be some change from when it's cold or when it's hot?
Yes, as the fluid expands, the fluid level would raise.
Okay.
And a lot of dipsticks will have a min and a max mark for hot and cold.
Okay.
So in other words, there's two scales.
Okay.
Most of the Camrys, if I remember correctly, just have one. So when it's cold, it should be at the minimum mark.
Okay.
And then as it gets up to, as it reaches operating temperature, it should be between the min and the max.
Okay. Well, if this really is overfilled, should we go back to the shop that did it?
Yes.
Okay. And the reason we had the service done is because, well, it was shifting a little roughly. Is there any point in, you know, having the level restored to normal, but putting in one of the additives that you see advertised, do they work?
What I have always used on the Toyota products is the Toyota automatic transmission fluid.
Okay.
It has the additives in it that you're referring to for okay. shift characteristics. So you might, when you go back, make sure they used the Toyota fluid.
Okay, so that might make a difference as opposed to something we just go out and buy anywhere?
Yes.
Okay. All right, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, and over to Belgium, line number one for the next caller. Hello.
Good morning, sir.
Mm-hmm.
You've been speaking quite a bit this morning about these hybrid electrics and stuff. I'm under the understanding, now I could be definitely wrong, and please correct me, that automobiles in Europe have developed a small diesel that is supposed to be fairly efficient that we do not use here in the United States. Is that true?
I'm not sure. You're talking like a three-cylinder?
All I know is it's just supposed to be a fairly small diesel that is fairly clean and fairly efficient and these sort of things. And I've been driving a pickup truck for years that is now paid for, and I've been thinking about getting a new vehicle, but I don't really want to go back to the same technology. And is there any small diesel pickups that could get better gas mileage and stuff? I know the diesel fuel is more expensive now, but I think that's more a temporary thing than a forever situation.
Well, it definitely varies from state to state as far as diesel fuel.
Yes, it does. Being over here on the Indiana-Illinois border, it's amazing the difference of prices from time to time.
Yeah, because you very seldom you see a semi stopped in Illinois buying diesel fuel.
You're absolutely right.
They drive through the state.
That's right.
But as far as diesels, you just have to do a little bit of research on there. I think he seems to...
Well, do you know of any kind of smaller size pickup that gets much better gas mileage? The one I'm driving is a Ranger, and back 5 years ago when I bought it, they said, oh, you're going to get this kind of mileage and that kind of mileage. It never really did get that sort of mileage, and I'm just wondering if there might be something a bit better.
Well, maybe if you just did a little consumer reports and mileage and trucks.
And go that sort of way.
Yeah, and just remember that those numbers...
are a lie.
Well, they're not a lie, but they're higher than what you're actually going to get.
Yes.
So, but I mean, if you look at the comparison of numbers and just understand that those numbers are a little high, it's still all relative, meaning if one gets 16 and one gets 13, even if you buy the one with 16, it's probably going to be, you know, around 14 and a half or 15, and I mean, the other one's going to be the same proportionately less.
I see. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
All right,
you're
thanks.
Welcome.
There are a lot more diesel vehicles on the road in Europe than there are in the United States. Is that because Europeans somehow, something about the technology they like, or was it, is that, has something to do with the fact that at least for a long time, diesel fuel was less expensive, and so people thought, well, let's go with the vehicle that burns less expensive fuel? I'm not sure.
The popularity of the small diesels, for example, Volkswagen had four-cylinder diesels, just like the gentleman was talking, and they had them in pickup trucks and cars, and they've just kind of no longer. And maybe in that area that, like you said, diesel fuel is very, very cheap. And of course, if it is, the diesels are going to become more popular.
Yeah.
And of course, here it seems to be the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know that there are all that many cars you can get. I'm assuming you can get a range of pickups with diesel engines.
Yes.
You can buy a Mercedes with a diesel engine and a Volkswagen for passenger cars with diesel engines. I'm not sure that there are that many other cars that passenger cars that you can get in the United States that are other than Volkswagens and Mercedes that
I don't believe so.
Have a diesel option.
I mean, I definitely work on less diesels every year than I have in the past. I can remember just seemed like that's maybe half of what I was working on for a long time. So, you know, General Motors had diesels and Peugeot and Volkswagen, like we said, and Mercedes, like you said. I think BMW even had one for a while. But I don't know if it's just the noise or the odor or people just don't like them, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and now also here, at least, and it may be, as the caller said, that it's just temporary, but just recently now the cost of diesel fuel has really gone up.
Yes.
Here in the United States. Okay. Well, let's talk with somebody on cell phone here, line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I just heard you say something about having your fuel injector cleaned. My car has 160,000 miles on it, and I don't know that it's ever been done.
What I was referring to was an additive. It's in a little. It's in a small bottle, and you simply pour it in the gas tank before you fill the tank.
Oh, I see. It's not something that my mechanic would do. It's just something I would do.
Yes, just preventative maintenance 4 times a year.
4 times a year. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right,
sure.
Thanks. And this is the kind of thing that you go where they, just probably about almost any place where they sell automotive parts or auto additives. You can go to Kmart, you can go to AutoZone, you can go to someplace like that, and they should have a whole shelf of different things like that, and probably several, 4 or 5 different, 6 different
right.
ones just of that. Is there any particular one that you like or anything that you would say, when you're looking for this, if you have 5 or 6 different choices, does it matter which one?
Then I would buy, if I had choices, I would buy Tektron. Tektron comes in it's a black bottle. And it's a little more expensive, but when we do normal servicing, like every 15,000 miles we've talked about before, that's part of the service when the car comes in. That gets added to the gas tank. And if there's a running-related issue or a mileage-related issue and this everything else seems to be checking out okay, then I usually put a bottle of Tektron in that car, and it works quite well.
Yeah. And the idea is also that it should be a full tank, right? Or the tank should be full.
Well, the bottle will tell you. Some of the bottles you buy are good for 20 gallons. Some are good for 10. And it'll say right on there as far as mixing is concerned.
Okay. We have time, about 5-6 minutes here left, if you want to give us a call. Rick Karch is our guest from Rick's Automotive in Champaign, and every once in a while he's here on the program, and we give you a chance to call in. And if you have a problem with your car, you can talk it over with Rick, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. We talked a little bit off and on about the gasoline hybrid and the fact that a lot of people are attracted to that because the emission, it's better on emissions and it's better on mileage. There, I'm sure that I have read articles about the design construction of cars that say something like it is possible to make a car with a gasoline engine that would get very good mileage, much better than whatever the average mileage is today. And I think that, for example, doesn't Honda have a model where they claim that they can get 50 miles a gallon or something like that? Now again, you have to take that with the proverbial grain of salt. But I guess what I'm going for is if somebody wanted to build an extremely efficient gasoline, conventional internal combustion gasoline powered engine, could you do that? And what kind of mileage could you get? What does anybody think you could get theoretically if that was the most important thing, was to get the best mileage you could?
Well, I know some of the school's engineering students I've read have had contests along those lines. And typically to get extremely good mileage on a gasoline engine, from a combustion standpoint, and transmissions in particular, they've gone to 6-speed transmissions. But to do that from a performance standpoint, it's kind of a trade-off. The way I see it versus in gasoline, and I think that's one of the biggest problems there is to get lots of mileage, you're going to lose significantly in performance and acceleration. And that's why I don't think that it's going to work as far as manufacturing and sales.
No. So there's only, given that, and I'm sure that there are safety issues, because one of the things I suppose you got to do if you're going to get better mileage is the car's got to be lighter.
Yes.
And that may affect safety issues, and it may affect comfort, and it may affect the way the car rides, all kind of things. So there's got to be some kind of upper limit where it says there's no past this point on mileage, we're just not going to be able to go.
Well, and then, of course, the smaller you can make it, the more efficient it will become as well.
Yeah.
And that kind of gets back to what you just said as far as crash issues and testing.
Okay, well, let's talk with a couple more people here, and go next to Indiana, line 4. Hello.
Hello. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling about a 1991 Honda Accord that I'm having a problem with. Let's see. One day, some time ago, the car started up fine. I put it into gear to drive, and it did not seem normal. It was as if it was being held back in some way. It did move forward, but not in the normal way. So I tried to check the car myself, searching for a problem. And I wound up changing the battery, putting a brand new battery in, and changing the ignition switch, the electrical portion of the ignition switch, and I still couldn't find the problem. Then I checked the ATCU, the Automatic Transmission Control Unit. I opened up the case and found that the board itself was burnt. There was a burnt spot on the board. So something caused the ATCU to burn up. I put another ATCU in there after I had replaced the battery and the ignition switch, thinking that it would be okay, and the second ATCU burnt up as well. So now I'm kind of stuck. I don't know what's causing this problem.
Now, what you have to do at this point is go through the individual solenoids on the transmission as far as resistance is concerned. What damages computers is high current flow,
yes,
which typically means one solenoid is shorted, or it's shorted internally, or it's shorted to ground. I've seen both.
So you say the individual solenoids on the transmission?
Yes, correct.
Is that something that I myself could get to, or are they inside the transmission, or what?
The connections are external.
Are external.
Yes. So if you look at a wiring schematic and then go by color codes, I would start out just checking each of the solenoids individually.
Check each individual transmission solenoid?
Yes.
Is there some kind of a book that I could buy to help me do this? Because I've never worked on this kind of a problem before.
There's books out there that you can purchase that would have a wiring diagram. You might even try just going to the public library. They probably have something for a 91 Accord.
You know, I own a Haynes repair manual.
Okay.
And I've done some reading in there, but I don't remember coming across information about the individual transmission solenoids, where they are located, how to test them.
Yes. It may not be in that manual.
Okay. So apparently a solenoid could be shorting out. That yes. could be causing the problem.
Correct. That's what I would look at.
Okay. All right. Thank you very
All
much.
Right, thanks. Welcome. We'll try to do one more here at least. Someone on a cell phone, line one. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have a quick question. I have a 2005 Town & Country Chrysler van, and it has 28,000 miles on it, and I'm leasing the vehicle, and I had some issues with the air conditioner not blowing out cool air, so I took it to a dealership. They're telling me that a rock went through the condenser, and that's not a covered warranty item. Is that possible?
You're talking about a factory warranty then?
Yeah, it was covered for 3 years, 36,000 miles, and it, like I said, it's got 28 on there, and they're telling me that this certain repair is not covered under the warranty, and they want like $1,200 to fix it. And my question is this a common thing that happens to these vehicles, and what's to say it's not going to happen again?
No, it's not common for, you know, a rock to go through a condenser, but from the same standpoint, I mean, Chrysler can't. That's probably what they're telling you. Yeah, that makes sense to me, what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Chrysler's going to warranty their vehicle for defects in workmanship
sure.
or quality of workmanship. They have no control over an act like that.
I was just thinking that the condenser would be a little more protected, you know, not being able to be ruined by a rock.
No, not really. It's right there in front of the radiator, so... It actually sees things before the radiator does.
Okay, I was just kind of wondering, because it's a big repair, and I obviously don't have a choice in doing it because the vehicle's leased.
Right.
So I just might go around and get a couple more estimates, because that seems kind of high to me. I don't know if you think that's high, or...
Well, I would definitely get some more estimates, yes. Okay. I would get at least three.
Okay, well, I appreciate your thought on that.
All right, well, thanks for the call. We're going to have to leave it there. We got one more caller. I'm sorry, we're just not going to be able to take, but we're here at the end of the time. A couple months here, maybe Rick will come back. We'll do it again. Thanks very much for being here.
Yes, thank you.
Rick Karch from Rick's Automotive in Champaign. Every once in a while, he's here on the show, talk a little bit about cars and car care. Programming here on AM 580 made possible in part by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois on the web at AmericanClassifieds.com. Broadcast also made possible by a grant from Horene's Pianos Plus, your Steinway Piano Showroom in Bloomington. Horene's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos. We are going to take a break. We are going to have some news and a market update for you. Then we'll be back, so stay tuned.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Good morning.